Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. Listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I have a great show planned for you today. My guest will be Courtney Paisley. She is the director of the Young Professionals for Agricultural Development, and she works out of Italy. And so I'm thrilled to have her on the show today. But before we get started with that, I, of course, want to talk to you about some things going on in the news and share my recipe of the week with you. In the news, I reported on a new study that showed that type 2 diabetes is reversible with diet. And that's something that many of us who are already into eating healthy and have been aware of alternative medicine already know that you can turn that around. But it's really nice to see that it's becoming more obvious to the mainstream folks. And it's really exciting. Right now when somebody is diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, you know, the doctor basically says you have to take this medicine and that is the end of it. They don't really talk about diet. And hopefully this new study will change that around a little bit. The Grocery Manufacturers Association is challenging the Vermont law to label GMOs. And the lawyers for Vermont actually are now petitioning Monsanto to turn over all of the data from all of their testing that they've done over the years, which is really exciting because, as you know, right now they fund most of the testing that says GMOs are safe. And those of us that don't really believe that are curious about all the tests that they do that show that it's not safe and that they haven't released. So anyway, this is exciting that now the Monsanto is going to have to turn over to the court and to the lawyers all of the testing that they've done, regardless of what the outcome is, and maybe we'll get a clearer picture on the GMO labeling issue. Last week was Earth Day, and 175 nations signed the Climate Change Accord that was written up in Paris last fall. And hoping that this is really a turning point for the future of our planet. The trajectory of where we've been going has not been very optimistic, and we really need to turn it around and keep fossil fuels in the ground and look towards alternative energy sources. And I'm hoping that with the signing of this, that people really are taking this to heart. We need legislation, we need laws, we need policies that make this happen. It's just not going to happen on our own. However, as individuals, there are things we can do, and I know they seem really small and insignificant, but if we get millions and millions of people to do it, it makes a difference. We can insulate our homes better. We can drive more economical cars. We can use appliances that are more energy efficient. We can unplug things when we're not using them. And one of the biggest things we can do is look at our diet. People don't want to talk about the greenhouse gas emissions that the industrial meat production causes, but it's a discussion that really has to happen. I am not vegan. I do eat some animal products. I eat fish. I eat dairy, but I limit it. My diet is mostly plant-based, and that is really what people have to really look at. We all need to make some sacrifices. If you're one of those people that just adores meat and can't bear the thought of giving it up, think about reducing the amount that you eat. Think about where you're sourcing it from. Think about what kind of meat you're eating. Greenhouse gas emissions from animal production produces more greenhouse gas emissions than all of the cars globally. It's hard to imagine, but it does. Growing the food for the animals is all using pesticides. All their feed is GMO. All of the fertilizers run off into the water and ruin the water, wrecks the wildlife that lives in the water. I mean, there's so many negative sides to the industrial meat production that we just all have to get off that bandwagon. So if you're going to continue to eat animal products, pay attention to where it comes from. Buy it from a small producer that's treating the animals humanely, that is not feeding them GMO, that is raising them in the right way, and eat less of it. Stretch it. Put little bits in dishes to give you the flavor that you're craving, but don't sit down and eat, you know, a 12-ounce steak. I mean, it's just not good for you, not good for anybody. So we all just need to really start thinking about making those changes. And if many people do it globally, it's going to make a big difference. So yes, we need the policy changes and we need our governments to take this issue seriously, but there are things that we can all do. And it's really time that we all really look at it and start making those changes. So I want to share a recipe with all of you before I move on and introduce Courtney Paisley to you. The recipe is braised seitan with shiitake and portobello mushrooms. And this dish is so good. And unfortunately, I haven't been using seitan so much because I'm cooking for a lot of people often. And so many people now have gluten allergies. And seitan is the protein of the wheat. So if you have celiac, obviously you can't eat it. But seitan is just a wonderful meat alternative for those of you that do love meat and are feeling challenged to give it up. This is a great recipe for you. You can buy seitan or you can make seitan. If you want to make your own seitan, I do have a recipe that I've shared before that you can find on my website. Otherwise, most of us are just buying already made seitan, and there are some good products out there that you can buy. So I started with one package of seitan, one onion cut in half and then sliced into crescent moons, 3 carrots cut into chunks, 1 head of broccoli cut into florets, 3 portobello mushrooms sliced, 6 to 8 shiitake mushroom stems removed and sliced, 2 tablespoons grated ginger, 2 tablespoons chopped garlic, olive oil, 4 tablespoons of tamari to taste, so you can add more at the end if you'd like that. 1/4 teaspoon of smoked paprika. That's also adjustable. If you really like that smoked flavor, you can go up to 1/2 teaspoon. I go light on it because not everybody loves it. 1 tablespoon dark sesame oil. 2 tablespoons aji marin, which is a sweet rice cooking wine. 1 teaspoon hot sesame oil, and that's optional. And 2 tablespoons of sesame seeds. So you're going to start by covering the bottom of a wok with oil. And when that's hot, you're going to add the onions. Add 1 tablespoon of the garlic and 1 tablespoon of the ginger and the carrots to that. And cook that at a medium-high heat, stirring constantly for about 5 minutes. Then add the broccoli. You can add more oil if you need more liquid in there. You can even add a little water if you want to keep the oil down. And cook that for a few more minutes. Then add the mushrooms and let those cook down for a couple minutes. And when the mushrooms are soft, you're going to remove all of the vegetables from the wok and transfer to a bowl and set it aside just for a minute so that you can use the same wok to cook the seitan. I always try to limit the amount of pots and pans that I'm dirtying, so that's the purpose. If you wanted to use a different pan for this part, you could. But anyway, I take the vegetables out and use the same wok, and I add a little more oil now to the bottom of the wok, and I add the seitan, and I sear that at a high heat for about 5 minutes with the garlic and the ginger. Then I add the smoked paprika and cook that for a couple more minutes. Then I add 2 tablespoons of the tamari and sear that for a few minutes. And what this does is it really sears on that flavor of the tamari, the ginger, and garlic onto the seitan. So it really makes it very flavorful. And the smoked paprika really gives it a nice flavor as well. Then I return the vegetables to the wok and add the mirin and the other remaining 2 tablespoons of tamari and cook that all together for a couple of minutes, allowing the flavors to come together. At the very end, you're going to add the dark sesame oil for taste and the hot sesame oil if you're choosing to use that. And that's it. Taste it. See if it's good. When you serve it, garnish it with the 2 tablespoons of toasted sesame seeds. And that is it. You know, is really a great, great recipe. As always, I'd love you to make the recipes and send me feedback. I'd love to know how you liked it. I want to know if the recipe was easy to follow, et cetera, et cetera. So now it's my pleasure to introduce to all of you Courtney Paisley. She is the director of the Young Professionals for Agricultural Development, also known as YPARD. And she's really working with a global youth network, bringing education and mentoring resources to this group. And I'm going to let her talk more about this really exciting program. Courtney, you with us?
Yes, so thanks very much for the introduction. So let me just start a little bit with the background on why YPARD itself was created. So what we're seeing globally is obviously an increase in global population, and so there are going to be more people that we need to feed. At the same time, what we have is a lot of young people that are migrating from rural areas. We're seeing less opportunities in rural areas, and so therefore they're migrating to urban areas for these opportunities. As they do that, we see an aging agricultural system. So a lot of the older people are staying on the farms while the young people leave, and not a lot of young people are coming to take over those farms. Now, this is happening globally. It's happening differently in different regions and in different countries, but it is something that we see from the Philippines to the U.S. to Kenya to places in Europe, and this is a real problem that governments are seeing and that they're trying to address. In developing countries, so a lot of the work that we do is looking at specifically agriculture in developing countries. And what we've seen there is not a huge amount of changes in the agricultural system. So while in places like the U.S., there's been massive, massive industrialization, of the agricultural system, in a lot of countries, it's still very much a lot of simple methods of farming. So you have very little changes in that. And therefore, young people are less interested in getting involved in that. You know, we are aware that young people are interested in additional technology, in business, in banking, in these types of sectors. And therefore, agriculture in a lot of countries hasn't kept pace with some of these industries. And therefore, is often not as does not provide the same amount of financial remuneration as a lot of these other systems. So therefore, we're looking at a system that has an image problem. Frankly, a lot of young people are not interested in staying in rural areas, in staying on the farm. They see these, you know, these great ideas of what they can do in urban areas. So YPARD itself was developed as a platform for a lot of these young people to get together and to talk about a lot of these issues. To look at the attractiveness of agriculture among young people and how can we start to change that? I think one aspect there is working with the media, looking at sort of role models of successful young people in the sector, and then also providing a space for young people to be able to get together and talk about some of these issues. And this is what we found was really missing, as well as bringing young people together to give their input in the policy discussions and debates. So this could be related to extension work, rural advisory services in Kenya, to young people in policy in the European Union. So YPARD really looks at a cross section of young people. So from young farmers to young extensionists, policymakers, researchers, and looks at the continuum and how can we really more strongly engage young people in the sector? How can we have a more positive image of agriculture, and how can we get more young people creating new and innovative ideas that will change the face of agriculture?
Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's a big handful of stuff to do. How are you doing it? How do you make it look attractive? How do you convince them that they can make a good living doing this? The social aspect is certainly necessary. People need to have each other to bounce ideas off of, but how are you dealing with all those challenges?
No, that is the big question. So we sort of target it in different ways. So one of the major issues, obviously, is can you make money from agriculture? And this is obviously a real reason why a lot of people want to go into it. So it's looking at specific contexts, specific countries, and looking at where is the money in agriculture? And most of the time, what we see, it's in the value addition. So we're looking along the value chain. It's often not in the production, the growing, the farming of the food itself, but in the processing and packaging, which in a lot of developing countries, only happens around the urban centers or sometimes happens in other countries once it's actually exported. So we're looking at how can we bring that value closer to those countries and actually closer to the farm itself, so that there is a real value in there. Then I think it's about, again, working with the media and who are these people that are making a difference and who are these people that are making money from this sector, because they do exist, but it's not that well known. These people, I mean, I think in Kenya they've done quite well on this. They've got a TV show called Shamba Shape Up, and Shamba means farm, basically, in Kenya. And so it's this reality show where they have people going to someone's farm and they diagnose it. They say, why your carrots aren't growing so well. They say, you know, you can cut out this middleman and this is how you can make more money. And it's actually a reality show that has gripped Kenya, where people see how you can actually take a farm that's not doing so well and how you can actually make it into a profitable enterprise. And then I think in some other countries, some of the cases where we've seen in looking at the attractiveness of agriculture is in some of the universities in Europe, they've actually changed the name of agriculture. So you actually have agricultural universities that are no longer calling it agricultural, they're calling it food systems or food science, which is something that young people, I think, connect to more. I think a lot of people are interested in food and where food comes from and how it works instead of the traditional idea of agriculture. Some examples I've seen from the United States as well have been some of the young organic farmers movements. So looking at the organic aspect and trying to get young people engaged in there. One thing, going quickly back to the educational aspect of it, is in universities in a lot of developing countries, agriculture is the sort of the choice of last resort. It's actually one of the subjects that you go into if you can't get into engineering or if you can't get into medical sciences, which is a real shame because it is seen as a punishment, as someone who didn't do well in school. And therefore, you get young people going into the sector that never wanted to be into it in the first place, and also the ones that may not want to commit, you know, that they don't have the innovative ideas in that sector because they're not passionate about it. So things are happening, but in some areas, and it's moving. But I think if young people sort of look at, you know, what does agriculture mean? That means food. That means what sustains us. And it's so critical, obviously, to humanity and to the future of the human population, that I think that is helping to change the image of it.
Uh-huh. You know, it's a little different, I guess, globally than here in the States. You know, it seems like the movement of young people going into farming, very often it is young people doing it, at least around outside of the urban areas, doing it by choice, but doing it as a, not a rebellion, but as a response to industrial agriculture and trying to bring back a more organic, sustainable agriculture. But it sounds like in, you know, many of the parts of the world that you're working with, like you said, it hasn't changed that much. It hasn't gone to the industrial. So it's not like a returning back to something. It's not a rebellion, but it's really like the same status quo. So,
you see in some places that things like organic or looking at local produce, I mean, that is starting to change in some of the larger urban areas, like I'm thinking of in Nairobi or in Johannesburg and, you know, in some of these bigger cities. But overall, I agree with you that it still hasn't reached that, let's go back to our roots component, because people haven't moved as far from their roots, let's say.
Mm-hmm. I heard a really lovely story of somebody going over to a town in Africa where they grew so many beautiful tomatoes, but they, you know, most of them, you know, with tomatoes, if you don't harvest them and eat them right away, they don't have a long shelf life, and they didn't know about canning. And so someone went over and taught them to do canning, and now they have a whole production of canning, and now tomatoes are available all over this area where they, you know, around the year where they used to not be available. Are you getting involved in things like that? When you say value added, is that kind of the workshops that you're working on, you know, teaching people how to can, how to preserve the food so that it can be used year round?
I mean, that's not something that our organization would do, but certainly when people are looking at implementing projects. So, for example, one of the responses recently to large levels of unemployment among young people globally, and this is a global issue. Young people have much higher rates of unemployment than adults in most countries. And what a lot of governments and a lot of people in general are saying is, okay, well, agriculture is one of these areas where young people are not that engaged. It's an area where where we haven't had that much development. And agriculture is one of those areas when you're looking at the development of a country that has some of the highest returns for that country in developing their economy. So a lot of people are really moving on this entrepreneurship train, let's say. And one thing that we try to advise people as they move forward on these projects, specifically engaging youth in entrepreneurship in examples like the one you just gave, is that you also need to look at the wider enabling environment. So like you said, someone can say, hey, this, you know, someone's done a market analysis and they say this region really has a really high demand for tomatoes, so you should grow some tomatoes. But what might happen is that person might grow tomatoes and then the roads are just in such bad quality that you can't bring them to market in time, and therefore those tomatoes are going to rot. So we're really trying to work with a lot of partners in this global agricultural sector to say we need to work together because there's so many different aspects of this that are important to make something like these individual small entrepreneurship programs succeed. And we need to look at in order to have large-scale impact, we need to look at the entire value chain, you know, from growing, from access of fertilizers, from growing season, access to finance and land, to infrastructure, to education, and it's actually just a really big process. So while, you know, we can definitely hear of success stories and where people really identify a niche in the market, we're also there to try to advise people on what different partners can we bring to the table to make sure that we've looked at all the different aspects here.
Mm-hmm. How does YPARD mobilize these people to take on these different topics? You know, is there mentoring, one-on-one groups? How do you engage them?
Yeah, so YPARD is a very large and loose organization, I would say. So what we have is we have regional coordination units, we call them, which is basically someone that coordinates some of the activities at the regional level, and we have national representatives. YPARD is present in terms of we have registered members through our website in, I think, over 190 countries. And then we have national representatives in over 65 countries worldwide. And what that means is that is someone who has agreed voluntarily to mobilize young people within their own country on issues that they feel are critical for young people in agriculture in that country. So we like to, because everything is so context specific and we can't claim to know what is important for a young person in Burkina Faso. So we have a young person who said, yes, I would like to be a youth leader on this and I would like to mobilize young people. And then they will develop a small working group and say, okay, what do we think is really important for young people in Burkina Faso? And
I'm sorry, can you tell, where is that? I don't even know that.
Sorry. That's in West Africa.
West Africa.
So it's a French-speaking country, in sort of Western Central Africa. But yeah, and so some examples that we've had in some countries is young people say, well, young people rarely get opportunities to network because young people in organizations, they may be students or they may be really at a junior level that they don't get opportunities to go to meetings to talk to people and to share ideas and really get that exchange of ideas. And so they started, one of our chapters started a YPARD cafe where young people get together and have informal discussions on topics related to that. So we try to give the young people space to come up with ideas that they think are important and to really come up with innovative ideas. That's one way that we do it in terms of working through our national representatives. We do reach out a lot online. I mean, social media is still a huge aspect of what we do, and we have really, really active Facebook groups and LinkedIn groups and all the rest because young people are really using that quite well. And this is extremely widespread in a lot of developing countries. I mean, young people in a lot of countries are online and they have access to the internet, and this is becoming less and less of a problem, except in countries that are very rural still, or countries that have high restrictions on their access to the internet. And then, I would like to talk briefly about our mentoring program, because one thing that we also find is really important to young people is to have that mentoring to go forward. So again, we have a lot of young people that aren't in big traditional organizations that enable them to discuss with sort of senior people. And so we've developed a mentoring program to support young people, specifically young people working on entrepreneurship in rural areas where they really actually need a senior person. And they identify what skills they need. So they say, look, I really need someone to help me in marketing, or I really need someone to help me in developing my business plan to access to finance. So that's something that we find is really important for young people to be able to move forward, to be able to access those people that they wouldn't otherwise have access to, and also to make them feel a little less alone. Because what we do know is that people who are entrepreneurs, who start their own businesses, it's actually a really lonely journey. And I think we often underestimate how much support that person needs to feel confident that their idea is a good one, to feel confident that they can continue to pursue it. And that is something that we at YPAR feel really strongly about, the need to support these young people in their journey.
Uh-huh. Now, does YPAR get involved in the helping secure loans for these young people? Because I know that's, really, from what I hear, a big challenge, trying to get the funding to start whatever idea they might have.
Yeah, I mean, that's not something that we do directly, but again, we work with partners who do that. But it is a huge issue. I mean, we all know that young people have less experience. They don't have as much collateral to be able to bring to banks, to be able to access funds. And this is a huge problem. This is actually something that's a really big topic right now within the entire African continent, so through the African Development Bank, in terms of how do we get young people to access funding. And they're actually looking now at trying to leverage loans from the African Development Bank with banks to give access to young people. So basically they would act as a almost a guarantor, let's say, to say, look, we can foot 30% of the loan if this young person defaults. Nothing has been implemented yet, but these are some ideas that are floating around. And especially when you look at, again, specifically in Africa, where the interest rates are incredibly high. They're about 15 to 18% for a lot of young people to get loans from the bank. And that is a huge, huge barrier
Sure.
already to getting funds. And then even more so if you're a young person and you can't access that.
Uh-huh. Is there available land for young people? I mean, so often you hear about problems with the land grabbing. You hear about the government owning the land and not allowing people on. What's the arrangement there?
Yeah, access to land, again, is a huge problem. And access to land that is fertile land and has access to roads and has access to a water supply, obviously, are huge issues. And again, we're looking at young people who don't have a lot of collateral and who can't buy lands or who can't get loans to buy these lands. Another thing that we're seeing is, and this is something that's happening also in Europe and in North America, is a lot of people are staying on their, as people live longer, they are farming the land longer. And as some of our social systems become weaker and weaker as time goes on, as our populations develop, people are finding the need to stay on their land longer and to farm longer in order to survive. So what we're also having is that parents aren't giving their land to their children at a much older age than they used to. And this is creating a problem because, first of all, if a young person does want to farm the land, they have to wait an awfully long time. And first of all, what do they do in the meantime unless they're working for their parents? And will their parents give them the leeway, let's say, to be able to make changes on the land that they might think are important, that they might think are more current? There's an interesting program going on in Europe right now. And basically what they are looking at is people to take over the land when people retire. So for people who are getting older and their children don't want to farm the land, they're actually trying to find successors who are qualified. So people who generally would have an education within, in farming systems, in agricultural management, to match them with young people who will actually take over their land. So yeah, that's the access to land is becoming even more of an issue sort of as time goes on.
Uh-huh. What is that program called, the one in Europe?
I know, I'm actually trying to think of it right now.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Okay. Yeah, lots of issues. Now you're located in Italy. Is that where you mostly work out of? Do you have paid employees that work with you? I know you talked about the mentors working as volunteers in other countries. How large is your organization?
Yes, so we have. As far as registered young people, we have over 12,500 registered globally, but we reach, I'd say, about five times that through our social media and on-the-ground outreach. I mean, in Nigeria alone, we have 15,000 members on our Facebook group, but we are very low in terms of management. So there's two of us based at the office here. We have a few part-time employees in different parts of the world that run our mentoring program and help with web and communications. But the reason that we're based in Rome, in case you're not aware, it's kind of one of these, it's kind of the center of the international agricultural organizations. So you have the Food and Agricultural Organization of the United Nations there, the World Food Program, the International Fund for Agricultural Development. So there's a lot of global agricultural organizations that are based in Rome. So it's just a strategic location for us to be able to advocate basically to a lot of these organizations to have programs that look more closely at young people and to engage young people and get their feedback in a lot of these programs as well, because it is quite amazing how many times I've actually been to a meeting where there's someone who's 60 years old that stands up and says, this is what young people want, and we're basically telling them what they want without the actual inclusion of young people say, well, this is actually my future, and this is what we want to do, and this is how you should work with us. So that's our reason for being here.
Yeah, that's a challenge across the board in so many different areas when people are really trying to do good and are coming from a place of like, we know how to fix you, and we're not, not always including those that we're talking about. And that's really, an important lesson, I think, that so many of us have had to learn over the years.
Essential. Nothing for us without us, I think, applies to so many different groups.
Right. Courtney, let's take a couple minute break. And when we come back, I want to just ask you a little bit about partnering. I wonder how much you do with like the slow food movement, or you mentioned those other organizations that are in Rome. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And my guest today is Courtney Paisley. She is the director of the Young Professionals for Agricultural Development, and she is based in Rome. Hi, Courtney. You back?
I'm here. Yes.
Great. So I'm sure you're aware of the slow food movement. It's quite large in Italy. Do you partner with them at all? I know they have a big presence in Italy, and they have a huge youth program. I'm just wondering how many of your participants also show up at like Terra Madre, where they have a huge youth program.
We have just started partnering with them, I can say, and definitely with the youth aspect of the slow food network, the slow food movement. And one of the rationales for my part, actually, to engage with them was, as I was discussing before, talking about the image of agriculture, because, again, when people see agriculture, they're far less interested. But when they talk about slow food and they talk about the food and the culture surrounding it and the ideas, it's something that attracts young people a lot more. So, and there's a very obvious and clear link between agriculture and food. And so we're trying to make those linkages a bit stronger. So that's definitely an organization that we work with and are interested in working with more.
Mm-hmm. Now, you also mentioned the role of media and how that affects the perception of people's career choices. Can you talk a little bit about how you see the media manipulating or positively influencing this?
Well, I would probably give more examples myself from developing countries where the media really shows really traditional images of agriculture. So they really show the local, you know, the local smallholder farm, very small plots of land, someone working with really traditional tools, like working with the hoe. And another thing that is good to note that in a lot of countries, agriculture is almost a punishment. This is what I'm told by so many people, where they're in school and they've done something wrong and someone says, okay, you have to go out and dig trenches, or you have to go out and work the fields. So for a lot of developing countries, people still have it in their mind that agriculture is a punishment. It's not something you strive to do. And so that's, I think, where we have to really change the pictures of agriculture. So not only show the business aspect of it, but also show the more modern aspect of it as well. So I think there's a real role that the media can play in showing showing different pictures and different ideas of agriculture.
Mm-hmm. And what do you see as how involved do you get in trying to change policy? And, you know, it must be so hard working, you know, throughout the world. You're not just working in one country where you kind of are familiar with what the policies are. How do you possibly get your hand and mind around the policies around the world?
Yeah, that's a great question. So what we do is, you know, in specific countries, we sort of ask our locally based members to look at sort of where they think that young people can influence policy. And the key to that is also knowing the language of policymakers. A lot of the language that they use is not the everyday language that we use. And it's really a specific skill to learn what messages will best reach the policymakers. So to find out what are their interests and how can we frame this in a way, and also frame it in a really quick or short way, because we all know that these people are often overworked and they don't have a lot of time to read through a lot of the material there. So you need to get something down to one or two pages in order to get the attention of a policymaker. So one of the things that we talk with some partners about, of giving young people specific skills on how do you speak to a policymaker. If you are going to mobilize young people and give that feedback to a policymaker, how can you do that? Another thing that we feel is really important is trying to mobilize as many young people as possible on a specific topic. So it's one thing about one person saying, hey, I think you should do this. But it's another thing about if you've managed to mobilize young people, either through e-discussions, either through events, either through universities, if you've managed to say, look, we've had an inclusive discussion with 1,000 young people who work in maize production in Mexico, and young people are saying that these are the specific things that we need, and this is what we need to get young people more actively engaged in it. Then you begin to have a bit of a stronger response. So that's something that we think the power in numbers is really useful for us.
Mm-hmm. And how about the movement with heirloom seeds and saving seeds versus purchasing GMO seeds? Is there much consciousness amongst your group about, purchasing genetically modified seeds versus not? You know, how much do they look at GMO as advancements and not want to stay, you know, the old fashioned way? And like I said, you know, here we're, you know, working on trying to get young people engaged in, you know, going back to the, you know, to more traditional, sustainable methods?
I mean, we have people on both sides of that discussion. So we don't have a position on it ourselves. So we're about encouraging debate and discussion on that. So we have some people that are very much into going back to traditional seeds and saving seeds, as you say. And then we have other young people that are, we have young people working for the private sector in our organization as well. So we really feel that the best way is to have these open discussions where young people can exchange ideas and that they can get other people's viewpoints. Young people on both sides that feel very strongly about both sides in our organization.
Really? Oh, that's surprising to me. So your organization, you'll find a mentor. If somebody wants to mentor using pesticides, you can find a mentor for them doing that?
So often we don't provide mentorship for technical skills because we mostly provide mentorship on what we call the soft skills, which we find is for young people in the sector, it's something that they often miss. So communication, networking, these types of skills. So we're less giving technical skill transfer.
Uh-huh. So more on the business end of doing farming.
Yeah. Business or networking or marketing, these types of aspects, particularly because if we're looking at, again, a lot of our people are rural-based, but if they have graduated from a university, especially in the agricultural sector, one thing that has been found is that young people are lacking a lot of those additional business or other skills. And so they have the technical skills from the university, but they don't have the additional skills that we know are really important for young people, such as presentation, networking, communication skills. So those are actually the ones that we have chosen to focus on in our program.
Uh-huh. You know, it's interesting. I'm listening to you say that. And, you know, I have a daughter that went to, you know, school for dance. And I know I went to art school and I, you know, am in an art world also. And, you know, it's actually interesting because similarly, when you go to school for the arts, you learn a lot about your art, but they don't teach you the business side either. And then, you know, people come out of school after 4 years of studying their art and they have no idea really about then how to promote themselves and how to network and how to, you know, and you're also working alone as an artist, you know, and so how to work together. So some of these problems, and, you know, I think business type skills and social media skills, everybody needs to learn across the board, no matter what they're going into.
Yeah, it's really true, and we've had discussions with them. So there's a global consortium of universities in higher agricultural education, basically, the universities are really aware of this. Some have taken more advanced steps than others, but this is a global issue where universities are aware that they have really been sort of talking to themselves for so long, and that as that's been happening, the sectors around them have sort of moved on while the universities have sort of stayed back. And so a lot of them are really aware of the need to sort of keep up with what's happening in the different sectors and to bring those people in as they're developing their curriculum as well, to make sure that it's relevant for young people. I mean, there was a study that was done in Armenia on young people in agribusiness education in universities. And they basically went, interviewed the CEOs of a bunch of agribusiness companies and said, do you find that the skills that the young people have when they come into your organizations are relevant for the work that you're doing? And by far, far and large, the majority of them said no, but it doesn't matter because the universities aren't up to date like we are. So we have to train everyone that comes in anyways. So I think we have this problem where I don't think we should bypass the educational institutions, but again, it's bringing them in and making sure that they're more relevant and that they're discussing with the relevant people in these sectors so that the graduates that are produced are able to sort of make an impact are relevant and are able to make an impact in the sector.
Uh-huh. Can you share with us a few of your success stories of people that you feel like you've really been able to help, through your mobilization, you know, change the trajectory of what they were doing?
I'm trying to think of at least a mentee that we have in our program in Kenya, in East Africa, you know, who joined the program. And, you know, when she first came, she didn't have an email address. And this was in June this past year. So she was really very rural based. And she met her mentor. And so while I think, you know, we as an organization, what we learned, you know, what we were originally thinking was, okay, we're going to give them all these sort of very advanced skills and we're going to move really quickly. And then we thought, okay, no, we need to change our perspective because, again, we don't know what this person needs. So I think for her, it was just about having that exposure and having exposure to this person. And now she's sort of moving much quicker along and she's more comfortable in these types of situations and discussing with these types of people and then, you know, getting the feedback that she needs. But I think a lot of the times for us, it's also about bringing young people into the spotlight giving them sort of the skills to be able to show off what they've done and what they think. So we have some... we have six young people that have been part of this young agripreneur program that was just launched, and they get seed funding to be able to they basically came up with these ideas and innovations and inventions, for example. So we have a young woman from the Philippines that is creating a machine that just by being pedal powered can get rid of weevils within certain grains to reduce pesticide applications in the Philippines. And so she proposed to us this idea. We've managed to give her seed funding, and now she's going to be going through a program for 12 months with mentoring and with some business support on how she can actually develop a prototype and then have this scaled to a lot of farmers in the Philippines because they have one of the highest rates of pesticide application of any country in the world on grains. So I think there are a lot of individual stories, but I would actually encourage listeners to go to www.ypar.net and look at our showcase where we have a lot of success stories of young people and some amazing things that they're doing in the sector.
Uh-huh. And what have you found as your biggest challenges and obstacles trying to run an online network of, you know, so huge, so, you know, in so many countries with so many different issues?
Yeah, it's absolutely a challenge. I think the challenge is first of all, understanding the heterogeneity of our members and of young people in general. I mean, young people are not only different between countries, but between cities, between individuals. So we're not talking about a group of people that have sort of the same challenges and the same issues. We're talking about a group of people that have extremely different backgrounds and aspirations and experiences. And so that has been a real challenge for us. And then reaching out to young people in rural areas that don't have access to the internet is something that has also been a challenge for us. We've addressed it in a couple different ways. So, for example, in Sri Lanka, which is in South Asia, our national representative there, she does a lot of field work with young farmers. And so she prints out information that we send to her, and she actually prints it out and brings it to young people because they don't have mobile phones that can access the internet, and we can't actually reach them directly. And these are the people that really need the support the most, is the young rural people. Because there are opportunities out there, but accessing them and applying for them is a whole different story. So knowing where to find this information and knowing how to, and having the skills to know what this person wants in an application for a grant or for a training course or something like that is an incredibly difficult thing to do. So I think that's probably our biggest challenge right now, is finding the best way to reach out to young rural people and to bring them together and find out some of the key ways that we can address some of their challenges and their needs.
Mm-hmm. And how do you deal with the different languages? I mean, do you function mostly in Italian or English or?
So we work mostly in English because that's the sort of the international language of this sector, let's say. But we also have very strong French and Spanish components as well. So because in Latin America, obviously we have a very lots of most things happen in Spanish or in Portuguese or I guess in English in some of the Caribbean countries. But so those are our major groups. And then in China we have a very strong Chinese group, and they have developed everything in China, and they have social media platforms in Chinese, which is, you know, they don't have Facebook, so they have the Chinese alternative. basically globally, most of our stuff is English, French, and Spanish. And then nationally, our members will have, let's say, Facebook groups or LinkedIn groups in their own language, and they will discuss in their own language. And then a lot of the materials that we send to them will be in English, but the local activities will be conducted in whatever language is appropriate.
Wow. That's definitely lots of different challenges, lots of different issues that you're dealing with in such a wide, varied population. What is the makeup of male, female in your group? Do you find most of the young farmers are women in the rural areas? How does that pan out?
Well, this sector, I mean, the agricultural sector is traditionally dominated by men, at least in most of the developing countries, and region-wise, we're strongest in Africa. So our membership is approximately, I would say, 65% male, 67% male, which is a reflection of the nature of the industry. So agricultural research in particular is male dominated. While we know that a lot of the producers at ground level are women in the household. So I think we make specific attempts to reach out to young women for our programs. We specifically try to focus on the needs of young women and be aware that those needs are different from young men, and that the opportunities that young women have are very different from the opportunities that young men have. And these are again, different in different regions, especially pronounced in some countries and in some regions. So, but I think that's again about trying to reach out to young women at the rural level who may do a lot of the production there, but who may not be, who probably don't actually have control over the resources of the household, which is often what happens.
So tell me, is there anything that I have not covered that you'd like to share about YPARD?
Well, I guess I would just say, so YPARD, we're a global youth network, and you can sign up at www.ypard.net, and it's free to sign up. Now, for young people, the most valuable thing, the valuable thing that you'll find when you sign up with us, register with us, is that we send out information on funding news and job opportunities and different ways to exchange information. And then for people sort of who are in the older age bracket, we'd also encourage you to register as well, as we see you as youth champions, and you may be people that are willing to support young people. You may want to engage them in your own work, or really just get a sense of what are different young people in this area and in this type of work or in this country thinking, and what are they doing, and how can I possibly engage with them? So I would just encourage people to come and see what's going on, and maybe there's something there for you where you can become more active.
Mm-hmm. And just one last thought, I guess, for me, since, you know, so much of the work in education that I do is really trying to make people aware of sustainable agriculture versus industrial agriculture. Do you see any future in YPARD taking a stand on that?
I mean, definitely sustainable agriculture is something that we promote. I mean, I don't see that as a very contentious issue myself. I mean, I think sustainable is obviously a very clear way that we have to go through with it. So that is definitely a message that we encourage our members, you know, that we pass on to our members. And we're always looking at what is sustainable agriculture. So agriculture that does not deplete our environmental resources and that can sustain young people in the long term, in the future, as they become older people and as they become leaders of the future. So I think that is absolutely and clearly something that we all need to work together to make sure that what we are doing is sustainable.
Good. I'm glad to hear that, because, you know, you talk about, you know, finding land, but finding land that's fertile. I mean, you know, we know that the industrial model depletes the soil of its fertility, and you have to keep adding those amendments if you're going to farm in that way. And so, you know, building up the soil, I mean, every true farmer I know, you know, always just comes back to the soil and talks about the soil. And, you know, so I would think that would be an integral part of your work.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, we're not growing any new land, but we're growing lots of more people. So I think the soil that we have, we need to nurture it to make sure that it's there for the long run.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Courtney, thank you so much for joining me. It's been so informative. And I hope some people listening will reach out and join your organization. You're doing great work. Thank you.
Thanks very much for having me.
And everyone for joining us, thank you so much. Have a great rest of the week, and I'll see you again next week. Bye for now.